This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
If you don't hear when Ryan Clark talks, you're missing a lot of good football stuff. You could hear him on a lot of ESPN platforms, and he's nice enough to carve out some time for us right now. Ryan, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you doing today?
Good, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. What do you make of the Le'Veon Bell release, and is there a finger to point to someone to say it's their fault?
I mean, I think all the fingers in New York right now point to Adam Gase. It seems like, you know, you got to think about this, the GM that brings Le'Veon Bell in is fired. Right. You know, after 2 months after making this deal, and never really was Joe Douglas's guy from the beginning, and seeing Adam Gase didn't necessarily want him, didn't think there was a value for him there. And so I believe when it starts like that, the only way for it to change is for actual hearts and minds to change. And it didn't seem like anybody there wanted that to happen. And so when you have a case where it's not really a quote-unquote fit for your offense, when you're not willing to tailor your offense around who was once the most productive back in the NFL, this is the outcome. He wants to be utilized in a way that you aren't, and on top of that, you aren't winning. I mean, it's one thing Bill Belichick gets to behave and act a certain way because he's constantly winning, and people accept that that's part of who he is, and that's part of the culture. When you can't win a game, you also can't have that type of personality, which Adam seems to have. And so I think when you combine all of those things, it was just a relationship that was never going to work.
But what I don't understand, Ryan, you know, when I first got my driver's license at 17, I drove my mom's car, which was a 79 Dodge Aspen. I wished it was a Trans Am. It would have been nice for it to be a Corvette, but it was a 79 Aspen. And I drove it because it was my only shot to drive. All right, so you don't like Le'Veon Bell. He's not your kind. He doesn't fit into what you want to do offensively. But he's your only weapon. Like, how can you be that vindictive to not use someone that can actually help you win, even if he doesn't fit? Does it make sense for a coach to be that vindictive?
You know, I don't know if vindictive is even, you know, the description of it. But it does seem in a way that obviously his ego was involved in this. He was going to do this his way. And listen, I get that. You know, so many different coaches try to bend to the will of other people or do things that they aren't necessarily comfortable with, and they end up losing their jobs anyway, or they don't do as good of a job as they think they could have going their way. So maybe this is the choice that Adam made. But I agree with you. Listen, if what you are doing isn't working, it's no longer bending to the will of others. It's no longer accepting the player you didn't want. Is trying to utilize the roster as it's constructed to the best of your possible ability in order to win football games, because that's in the end, that's how you keep your job. Not being correct, not being right, not saying, right, hey, look, I didn't want this dude in the first place. I'm not using him. Look at us win. And so I would have liked Adam to do something differently, to work with Le'Veon Bell in a different way, and also use him to protect Sam Darnold in some way. What's extremely hard about this, I'm not sure that you guys, you know, noticed about me and Adam, but Adam Gase was the GA at LSU when I was in college. Adam and I were actually really close. He kind of helped me learn to break down film. He was, you know, one of the dudes I would go to a lot because he was young. He was eager to ask questions I may have thought stupid to ask other coaches. And so, you know, it's difficult to have to say these things about him and talk about him in this way. But it gets to a point to where you just have to be honest. He should have handled this situation in a very different manner.
Now, you see things differently than we see them because, you know, you were a star and you played the game. You're on the field. So, I mean, there are some people that say, well, Le'Veon Bell's done. From what you see, is he done or can he excel if he's used the right way?
You know what? I don't think he's done at all, but he has to understand. And when you look at Le'Veon Bell and understand who he is, you have to know what type of back he is. Le'Veon Bell was very productive in Pittsburgh because he was utilized a ton. He got a lot of touches in the run game, in the pass game. And so when you can do those type of things, he can get in a groove, he can get moving, and he accumulates yards. And, you know, every now and then he'll pop one, he'll get loose. But if you watch Le'Veon play, you understand he's not a home run hitter.
he's not a Saquon Barkley type of back where you can go 2-2, -260. That's not the way Le'Veon worked. I think what you also have to realize, you know, I put out, I guess, what was kind of a funny tweet, but I said, look, you know, initially he took the right pill. And when you take the right pill and you had that ignorant bliss on the Matrix, you become Neo because you got Morpheus and you got Trinity. So you got a great offensive line, a great coach, a great organization, great players around you. And now you ascend to the top of the game. And then when you take the other pill and now the unpleasant truth is revealed and you realize you don't have those things anymore, you're not as good. You don't have that support. So what Le'Veon has to do is be okay with maybe being running back by committee, being a part of a duo or a tandem of backs on a contending team with good players around him, because I do believe he can get back up to 15 to 20 touches a game. He can be very effective in both the run and the pass because of his versatility. But you also have to understand he's not instant offense in the sense that you run him in the game, give him 8 touches, and you get 60 yards out of that.
Do you think he regrets not staying in Pittsburgh, or do athletes not live in regret and just realize that, hey, that's what was the right thing to do at that particular time?
Athletes totally live in regret. I mean, because we're just like every other human. I think sometimes it's about you making decisions that fit your priorities at the time. And at that time for Le'Veon, it was money. I remember my second go around in free agency, I had played with the Steelers for 4 years. We'd won a Super Bowl. You know, things were really good, and I played really well. But I was always going to be the dude that made sure Troy could be great. I went down to Miami. I had a visit. They ended up not starting where I thought they would money-wise, but they went up quickly, told me I could be the dude. But it just didn't feel right, and the money wasn't as important to me as being comfortable playing somewhere that I could play well and playing out a whole contract. So I made a decision to play at Pittsburgh, and it was the right decision. I think Le'Veon looked at it like he thought he was worth a certain amount of money. And he felt disrespected by the way that Kevin Colbert, the GM of the Pittsburgh Steelers, was handling his contract situation. So he made his decision based on that. And as long as you make your decision based on your priority and your principles, I think you can live with them. But it is very human to look back and say, you know what, that probably wasn't the right decision for my career, even though I got, what was it, $28 million in 17 games.
How different is the feeling of being, and obviously you were in Pittsburgh, so you didn't get to feel it that much, but you were also in Washington, so you felt it other places. How different is it, Ryan, when you're on a team that stinks, but you know that they have a new coach and who's the future? You know, like Washington right now, for example, maybe with Ron Rivera, versus when you're sitting on a team that's a dead, just sitting there dead without knowing what the future is. How different is that experience?
It's way different, Joe, from the sense of knowing that you weren't building. You know what I'm saying? It's saying now it's about individuals. Like everybody who plays for the Jets right now, they need to be self-preserving, right? They need to be worried about what they can do, how good they can be, what type of film they can put out, because they're expecting a new coach to come in, and they're expecting that coach is going to look at the film, see who continue to give effort, see who continue to work, and grade everyone individually about how he moves on the next year with that roster, as Joe Douglas will be doing the same thing. Whereas when you're somewhere like Washington, you're saying, you know what, I'm going to find a way to entrench myself with this regime so that they want to move forward with me in building what we have here. Because it's about perspective. You know, think about when you see a game that's 21-21 halftime, but one team was leading 21-0 and allowed the other team to score 3 touchdowns. That's 2 totally different perspectives walking into the locker room of that game. There's one team who's extremely excited. They just went on a 21-0 run. And there's another team who is down in the dumps, wonder what happened because they gave up 21 points. And so those are the type of differences you have when you're in Washington. Ron Rivera is the guy. You understand he needs to put in his structure, implement his protocols, his regimen in order to make you winners. Whereas Adam Gase, you've been there for, you know, a year and a quarter, and you understand things aren't changing. Things aren't trending to be better. They're actually getting worse. And in getting worse, it brings out the selfishness in that you know that we aren't in this together, because this together will be different next year.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Clark, our ESPN analyst for the NFL, does an unbelievable job for the network. Ryan, you piqued my interest with Gase being the graduate assistant for Nick Saban at LSU. So I have to know, was he always this intractable? Did he have this kind of arrogance and swagger back then?
You know, he was kind of like Peter, you know what I mean? He was cool. No, I'm just playing.
Hey.
But I had to take a shot at somebody, bro. I've been on here a few minutes, you know, and I was being super nice to everybody. Yeah. No, I was just playing.
Bring it.
Not with you, dog. I seen you get heated. I already know how that goes. I seen the social media clips.
Thank you.
You know, no problem. You know what? He wasn't like this, but I think he was young as well. I even remember as far back to when he was in Denver and Tim Tebow was the quarterback, and I remember him walking over to me because I couldn't play in Denver, so it's pregame in the playoffs. And he's like, hey, man, Tim loved watching you on film. He thought you were a really great player. He'd love to meet you. And, you know, I go over and I meet Tim and I talk to Adam and we have this great conversation. Fast forward to a couple of years ago, I don't know if you remember when Ryan Tannehill kicked Kalen Ballage out of practice. And okay. So when he did that, you know, like Tannehill wasn't this Tannehill. He was Tannehill that was stinking it up in Miami. So I was like, who is he to kick another guy out of practice? And I kind of go off. And I get a phone call from Adam, and I'm landing in New Orleans, and I had to drive to Baton Rouge, which is like an hour and 15-minute drive. And you know, and we talked that whole time, and there were parts of that conversation where, you know, the guy I knew in school was still there. And then there were other parts that I think you get hardened by coaching in this league and by understanding that you're under this constant scrutiny. And even if you try to ignore the outside noise, it still gets to you. And I think he has to deal with that while trying to win. So I believe you do lose pieces of yourself as you grow. You know, we all change with our experiences, and being an NFL head coach, I think, brings out some of the worst in you. And we see that as he stresses and trying to make his team win.
You mentioned how not everything is the same. You've got a giant team that's 0-5, same record as the Jets. But do you see a lot of the same things, or do you see a team that, despite the losses, might be still moving in the right direction and are coached better?
Gosh, you guys put me on the spot. I'd be such a turd. I'm like the worst friend ever. It's different. It's different. And I'd be lying to you if I said it wasn't. I'd be lying to you if I said that there's a different level of professionalism in which the individuals on each team plays. Now, Daniel Jones still has his issue, but when you watch the New York Giants play defense, the defense is sound. They may get beat by playing better players, but seems like guys are in the right position. People are tied together. Even Daniel Jones and the way he carries himself on the field with confidence. Now, we all know if he get hit in the pocket, he gonna fumble it. But before that, he looks the part. And I think Joe Judge has added something, you know, to this team that makes them feel like, you know what, going forward, we have the right guy. Even if the wins and losses aren't saying that you're that much better, it's the competitiveness. It's being, you know, having an opportunity on the last drive to score a touchdown and maybe get a two-point conversion to take the Los Angeles Rams to overtime. It's needing a last-minute drive by the Dallas Cowboys to kick a field goal to lose on the road. And so when you start looking at those things and the competitiveness of a team, it seems different. It feels different. The buzz around the staff and the buzz around the building isn't as negative as it is in New York. I mean, I'm sure you guys do this every day. I don't know the last time y'all had an opportunity to say something positive about the Jets. You know, I think the only thing you probably could have said is, hey, their former best defensive football player played really well for the Seattle Seahawks because they traded him. And so when you look at some of those things, you know that one team is trending in the right direction and the other is not.
Ryan, we go back and forth about Sam Darnold. And I'll just give you my take. I look at the kid with the Chargers, and I there's a lot of wows when I watch him. And then the kid with the Bengals, there's a lot of wows. Other than Sam's run, I don't get that many wows. And I know Dan Orlovsky swears by him. He said with a different coach, he'd be great. What do you see with Sam? Are you seeing the wows that I'm not seeing?
You know what? So I'm old and boring, so I watch every game like two or three times.
Okay.
There's been some plays this year. I think Berrios was two of them, where you watch Sam Darnold escape the pocket, throw across his body, and it's like, holy cow. And I'm not even talking about the Denver play. I believe one of the plays was against the Colts. The other was probably the week before. And you see these things, and you're like, holy crap, he has it. I go far back. My son plays for Arizona State now. In his junior year, they were recruiting him. The game we flew out for was USC Arizona State. And so, you know, they allow you on the sideline. And I remember he's warming up. It's pregame, and he's throwing comebacks to the outside. And when I say it's whistling, fellas, like it's like, oh, it's like crazy. First half of that game, he scrambles up into the pocket, steps up, throws a post on the run. It's right on the money. So right then I'm like, oh, shoot, this kid has it. But then you watch the film and you see the boneheaded mistake. You see the pick six to Xavier Rhodes. You see the interception in the end zone that he throws into really what was a busted coverage to Xavier Rhodes again. And then you're watching this game and you're like, how does this kid with all of this freaking talent keep mucking it up this way? I do see the wows in who he is from a measurable standpoint. I don't see the wows in who he is as a quarterback, if that can be understood. Like when you watch Justin Herbert go 4-for-4 in the red zone against Drew Brees and New Orleans Saints, a very good defense, one of the greatest of all time on the opposite sideline, and he's on point. He knows how to manipulate the pocket. He beats the rush. And then you watch him go to the sideline, take his helmet off, and he still has, like, adolescent acne. You realize how special that kid is because he still has so much growth in him because he's so young, such a baby, but he seems so polished already. I agree with you. That looks different to me.
All right, so then I have to do the follow-up question that we ask everybody. The Jets very well could go 0-16, Ryan. Very well. So
I hope not.
I hope not either. I mean, they're on our station. We don't need to talk about this every week, but they could. So they would get the number one pick in all likelihood, unless the Giants went 0-16. And that would really be the Jets, because then the Giants would get the first pick, the Jets would get the second. But I see the Giants winning some games. Anyway, if they have the first pick and Trevor Lawrence is available, do you stay with Sam Darnold and do you trade that pick, or do you take Trevor Lawrence and trade Sam Darnold?
No, you take Trevor Lawrence. You take Trevor Lawrence because you can't you've seen Sam Darnold for 3 years. It really hasn't materialized the way that you want it to. You know, going into the fourth year, it hasn't seemed, you know, it won't seem like, okay, this is our guy. So now you can make your decision without having to, you know, add a fifth year option or do some of these things you have to do going into Sam Darnold's fourth year. And so for me, I think you take Trevor Lawrence, because if you miss, let's say you miss, it's going to be like missing on almost LeBron James. Now, I don't think Trevor Lawrence is what everybody else says he is. I do think he's extremely talented. I think he's a really good player. But if the scouts, if the executives feel that he's the next coming of John Elway, the next coming of, they say, the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, then everybody thinks he can't miss. So you have damaged goods. You have someone who may be shot from you know, being pressured, from not having success, who may just need a change of scenery. So get the kid who's experienced success. Get the kid who's the can't miss and start to build with him and start it all anew instead of trying to rebuild, retread, and reprogram Sam Darnold, who, for all intents and purposes, can be ruined, or this may just be who he is, whether Adam Gase is the coach or not.
Well, great stuff, Ryan. We thank you for coming on and being so forthright and honest. We do appreciate it.
My man, y'all have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.